This is Studio Plus 972 with Benji Schulman, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show.
101.9 Chai FM. I am Benji Schulman and this is Studio 972. And welcome to the show on this quite warm Monday morning for a winter, I have to say. It was quite pleasant out during the day, smidgen chilly during the morning, but basically nice and sunny and pleasant. And I have to say, looking really good on the Joburg side of things is all of these aloes that we've been accustomed to seeing during winter. If you listen to my show, I guess about a year ago, we had this aloe expert on because there's an aloe farm out in Harderbeersport. And aloes are just an absolutely fascinating flower. I spent my weekend potting some aloes that needed a bit of attention. And if you drive around Joburg, at the moment, there's all of these aloes that are flowering and different kinds. You get different reds and yellows at this farm. They had oranges and purple ones, and they're all different shapes and sizes. You've got long ones and the spear type ones, and you've got small ones and short ones and big ones. And really is a very South African and quite sort of, let's say, high felt, bush felt type plant that you don't really get anywhere else in the world. So appreciate it. It's something which we get to have here in Johannesburg in particular and South Africa in general that helps to just give a splash of color at a time of year when the rest of everything is a little bit dead. So yeah, have a check out those aloes. Open your eyes. They're all over the city. And they're very beautiful and well worth the effort to have a look and even grow if you are into that. But we don't have any aloes on the show for today, but we do have a bunch of other cool stuff. What is going to be happening? So mid-show, we have a guest. You will know him as everyone's friendly neighborhood councillor, Daniel Shea. And we have him on because coming up this weekend is a voter registration drive. And this is very important because if you don't register, you can't vote. And particularly with these elections, A, there's a lot on the line when it comes to who's going to be running. I see the ANC has released its list of candidates, which is very interesting. Potential candidates, which might be something to discuss itself. But the point is that local government elections, actually the requirements for registration are a lot more stringent than they are for national government. And so if you don't know what you're doing, then you will not be able to vote when the time comes. We're also going to be looking at Somaliland with all the discussion around the diplomacy around Iran and America. We've had the Somaliland president come to Israel. They're going to be opening an embassy, doing a bunch of things. So we're going to be finding out, well, what does that mean? We're going to be talking about things that are going on in Cape Town at the moment. Cape Town, a bit more of a hotspot when it comes to anti-Israel sentiment than up here on the Highveld. And two big things happening in the last week that are worth watching. So we're going to be covering that. Then we are, for Youth Day, talking about birth rates and why is it that people are having less children. And also we'll be reviewing for you the movie with a heavily Jewish background, which is the movie Tuna, not the fish, the piano. So that is all coming up on the show today. And if you want to be part of the discussion, we would certainly always welcome it. 061-895-1019. That is your WhatsApp line if you would like to be part of the conversation. We spoke about aloes. So if you have seen any spectacular aloes in the last while, just give us a WhatsApp and let us know where we can find some to look at. I'm Benji Schulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Schulman, and this is Studio 972. And there's been a lot of focus in the last couple of days about this deal with Iran. I don't know that we necessarily have a full handle on how good or bad it is, although I have to say it doesn't look fantastic. But that is masking some other diplomacy that has been going on in Israel in the last while, and so I thought we would focus on that and somewhat and see what we could actually talk about and get some insight into. So what has happening exactly is that the president of Somaliland, Abdirahman Mohamed Abdullahi, has visited Israel and has described it as a historic milestone. And if you don't know what Somaliland is, let's do a quick recap. So if you go along the Horn of Africa, you will know about Somaliland's bigger, more well-known, far more chaotic, crazy cousin, Somalia. And Somalia is kind of synonymous with terrorism and warlordism and pirates and, you know, basically every horrific African country stereotype that you can possibly come up with. Somaliland, on the other hand, is slightly different. It's still in the same area. And basically what happened is that Somalia was, I think, a British protectorate, and Somaliland was an Italian protectorate during the different wars and World War I and II. And when independence started coming to African countries, these different areas both decided that they didn't want to be part of these empires anymore. They declared independence, and then as soon as they declared independence, they became one country. Unfortunately, the Somalilanders found that the chaoticness of the Somalians was a little bit too much for them to bear. And so about 30 years ago, they just seceded and said, we don't want any more of your chaos. And they became their own country. They have sort of regular elections. And so it's a sort of marginally democratic country. And it is stable. There's not a lot of wars. They sort of do their own thing. And they basically just ran themselves for the last 30 years without too much engagement with anybody else, but tried to get recognition and didn't manage to get anywhere. No country in the world was willing to recognize them. Partly that had to do with Somalia being a chaotic place, but also countries are nervous in Africa to recognize breakaway states because they are concerned that other breakaways may start in other parts of the continent, and that hasn't always resulted in very good outcomes. So they broke away, and basically they've been looking for recognition because that would make it easier for them to engage in commerce and do different things. Currently, the main export of Somalia, or the thing that it's kind of most, Somaliland, excuse me, that it's most famous for, is the fact that it breeds camels to the highest level possible for the purposes not so much of transport or even eating, but for beauty competitions. So there is a tradition of camel beauty competitions in Saudi Arabia. And if you want the best and most beautiful camels in the world, Somaliland is the place to go. Side note, there has been some controversy around camel beauty competitions in the last while because several camels were recently disqualified because of the use of Botox for their, I'm assuming the lips, maybe it's the eyes, I don't know. But yeah, that's just a side note. Basically, this is what Somaliland was exporting. And so they were trying to find some sort of recognition. And the first people who have now decided to give them recognition is, in fact, the Israelis. And the Israelis have done it for a couple of reasons. First of all, the sort of Horn of Africa has gotten very crowded with a lot of different players recently, and that has started to put Israeli security interests at risk. The one obvious one is the Houthis, and the Houthis obviously shooting at Israel and causing chaos to shipping in the Straits, so that's one. But the Chinese have a base in nearby Djibouti. Every nasty terrorist organization has a base in nearby Somalia. The Americans also have a sort of a base in Djibouti. But because the Chinese now have one, that's a sort of a problem. The UAE has a base. I think the Turks probably do as well, if I remember my facts correctly. I think the Russians are trying to find one via Sudan. So this part of the world is getting very crowded, and people want... countries need a kind of a footprint. So for the Israelis, that is one way of doing it, because there's not a lot along the Horn that you can actually engage with from an Israeli perspective because of the fact that it isn't recognized by those countries. So for Israel, recognizing Somaliland makes a lot of sense, and they get a strategic foothold in this part of the world, which is vital to their security interests. They also get a very reliable friend. The Somaliland president has come to Israel, is doing it openly. They're going to open an embassy. They're going to do it in Jerusalem because they're just so happy that someone is actually prepared to talk to them. And so this is going very, very well. The Somalilanders, besides the recognition, get quite a lot out of the deal as well. They, you know, obviously get access to what I call the big five of Israel. You know, water, agriculture, high tech, entrepreneurship, and healthcare. And these are all things that are sort of needed in the capital. They've sent a set of diplomats. They'll be having a representation, and so it seems to have gone rather well. And the Somaliland president has met with Gideon Saar, he's met with President Herzog, and it, you know, will be something in addition that Israel will have to use in its Africa arsenal going forward. Now, predictably, there has been quite a lot of outrage in the AU. They don't like this sort of thing, and they also don't like Israel most of the time, so there's been some condemnations there. The Arab countries have wall-to-wall condemned this thing because... it affects their interests in the region as well, and they don't really want to see Israel getting a foothold, so there's a sort of diplomatic spat going on with that. And the big thing is going to be, will Israel's recognition of Somaliland help it to gain recognition from other places, including the Americans? So far, the Americans have kind of stayed a little bit silent, but, you know, it has Israeli connections with different countries. Have helped to bring some sort of recognition. Part of the Abraham Accords was American recognition of some of Morocco's sovereignty over the Western Sahara, for example. So perhaps Israeli support there might do something. The UAE could be next because they would probably want to also look at building a base in that area. So, yeah, that is what's going on. And you can go check it out on Twitter. Lots of Israelis engaging with the Somaliland president and him going around. I'm sure he'll even have a bit of chance to hang out at this time of year in the beaches of Tel Aviv. So that is what's going on with Somaliland. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Things are hotting up down in Cape Town, even though it is the... even though it is winter season, and there is a lot going on there. And the last time that we kind of spoke about what was going on in Cape Town, it was actually to do with the Cape Town Marathon, which reminds me that I was happy to see that there didn't seem to be any major incidents of anti-Israel problems at the Comrades this year. Not that I've seen a few like protests, a few Palestinians waving flags and stuff. But it does seem to have been that there haven't been any, so far as I've seen, any breaking of rules with regards to what the comrade says, which was flying of flags and getting in the way of the runners, etc., that we've seen on in previous years, which I think is very positive. And it was good to see that there were a number of community members that have been running for local causes here. Which is fantastic, and people already just doing what is a completely absurd thing, which is to run 90 kilometers just for the hell of it. And I mean, personally, I like to join in solidarity with comrades runners on Comrades Day. I actually, you know, in solidarity did a few blocks when I got up yesterday morning, and then I took the block and put it back under the bed. Back to Cape Town. So what are we seeing there, and what are we looking at? So the one thing which I thought was super interesting is last week we got sort of very public and official confirmation, which kind of was already in court documents and writings in different spaces, about the role of the boycott against UCT and the effect that it's been having on the campus. So what happened was is the Parliamentary Committee on Higher Education was doing a oversight discussion, and they had in the discussion session the Vice Chancellor of UCT and the Chairman of the Council of UCT. And and one of the MPs, MP Kakao from the DA, actually mentioned and asked the question about what has been the impact on UCT. And it was such an interesting thing because the council said, look, 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 this thing was passed, but it really hasn't been implemented yet, which is kind of strange. So why pass things if it's not implemented? That was the first thing. And the second thing that they said was that so far, that 250 million rand in donor funding has been withdrawn from the university, which is an extraordinary amount of money. And what's interesting is that part of that was for a new neuroscience, a new neuroscience center, and part of it was for bursaries. So they said at least 15 million of that was for bursaries for underprivileged students. Now, it's interesting. This is not a political issue because the university had a lot of options when it was putting together its statements on Israel and its council decisions, etc. But they literally went about it in the most deliberate way so that it would cost them money according to the contracts that they had signed with different funders and different places that had engagements with basically co-research on different issues, collaborations. And they basically just decided to do it in the one way that would trigger the clauses in their contract that would force donors to withdraw. And that 15 million rand is an annual amount. And effectively, I worked it out. If you look on average at UCT, somewhere between 100 to 200 students are affected by that. And that's an enormous amount. And the 250 million rand is a highly conservative number because it only deals with private funding. So it doesn't handle the big institutional funding that comes from the US, from places like Germany and the EU, which don't support these sorts of boycotts. And so as a result, my estimation and estimations that I've seen in other places is that these things are now, this could be a 750 million rand, 850 million rand, moronic, stupid move by UCT. And it was extraordinary, and it was so interesting that when the university basically copped to having been complicit in this nonsense, how quickly the EFF and then the chair of the portfolio committee actually ran to their defense and said, well, you know, please don't attack the university for doing this because, you know, our country supports Palestine or whatever. But I think it was a kind of stark reminder of the costs of the stupidity of the pro-Palestinian cause and what that is actually doing to our sectors here in South Africa. On a similar and related note, today was also the court case between the Palestine Solidarity Committee and Cape Union Mart, which is the clothing and textiles and camping and outdoor stuff manufacturer. And what has been happening pretty much since October 8th is that you've had protests outside of Cape Union Mart, not because the company is involved with anything, but because the chairman is a Jew who donates money to Israel, mostly Karen Hayasod, which is the humanitarian and communal funding organization in the community. And so there have been protests going on, and it's not just protests. There's been actual intimidation. Children have been targeted. People have been told that, you know, whatever the normal nonsense that we hear. And so Cape Union Mart was basically annoyed and was a little bit done with this whole deal. And so they've taken them to court. And so now today was the first court date. Tomorrow is a public holiday, obviously with Youth Day. And then it carries on Thursday. And so we've seen protests from both sides. The PSC was out in full force at the court, but there's also been the South African Friends of Israel, members of the Jewish community, were out there supporting Cape Union Mart, and a lot of stuff going on around that, and that was very positive to see, coming on the back of what has been happening with the Cape Town Marathon, where crowds came out to support the Batman. That was running for the Bibas in the face of hostility. Now, you know, the Cape Tonians, bless them, we love them, but they can be a little bit slow to the party, and this doesn't seem to have been any change, any different this time around, but at least they do seem to have arrived. So well done to the Cape Tonians. It's good to see people getting out there, and now we need to start applying the pressure and really start exposing people like the university of UCT, boycotts, but also on the streets, getting out there, being loud and proud about what we think, because there is a kind of dangerous kind of thing going on social media where they're talking about, oh no, Cape Town is not Tel Aviv, and ridiculous nonsense about how they're implying that Israel is a part of how we are having the xenophobia nonsense, which is all garbage, but it's also because we need to stand up and organize ourselves. So that is that from Cape Town. And yeah, so just well done to the Cape Townians, and let's keep an eye out on what happens with that court case with Cape Union Mart, and also with actually UCT. There's a couple of court cases that are related to it, and a bunch of others. So that is what is going on in Cape Town. And I'm now happy to say that we are moving on with our show to our guest for today. He's everyone's favorite neighborhood councillor, Daniel Shea. He is the ward councillor for Ward 72 in Johannesburg. And if you haven't gotten one of his WhatsApp videos, then you're probably not on WhatsApp. And the reason we have him on today is because we have an election that has been proclaimed. And so the IEC is actually doing registration this weekend. And so we wanted to get him on to talk about the registration process and why it is important for you to do so. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us on Chai FM.
Benji, thank you for having me, and good day to the listeners.
Okay, so quick sticks for people who may not be aware. There is an election happening. When is that happening?
So the election's happening on the 4th of November, and you need to be correctly registered in order to vote for that. It's a local government election. You get your chance to elect your ward councillor and the various other councillors in council, and that chooses the mayor. So it's probably the election that has the most impact on the residents of Johannesburg's daily lives, much more important than a national election, actually. So everyone needs to actually ensure that they go out to vote, but to do that, they need to be registered correctly. And that opportunity comes this weekend.
Right. So just for that, I think it's an important thing for people to understand. Unlike Parliament, which is basically just an agglomeration of politicians that get elected sort of on percentage basis, our municipalities are actually represented in kind of districts, wards, areas of things for people. And then that's, you know, if there's a problem, then they can scream at a particular person who's in charge of a particular area. And so that is also quite important, because if, and we saw this actually recently, if you get just a few more votes than another party in this election, the entire ward can move across a different thing. So it actually makes a huge difference about where you vote and therefore where you're registered.
100%. So, I mean, we saw it in Mfuleni, what, 3 weeks ago, where eight votes chose who got to be their ward councillor. And it was the A1 ward of the ANC. So every vote counts in a local government election. The difference with that is, in a by-election, there's only one ward up for contestation, and the winner takes all there. At a local government level, there's 135 wards in Johannesburg up for grabs, and there's 200 seats in council up for grabs. So yes, every vote counts, but you absolutely all need to turn out in our numbers to ensure that we get the representation we want, not just for our ward, but for our city.
Right, because how it works is that you have ward councillors, but also you get a kind of people, they count as the number of votes in general, and have a separate people on what they call the PR list. But going back to the ward question, so that also means it's very important to know where you are currently registered, because if, say, you came up from Cape Town recently to Joburg, or maybe you've moved house recently, it might mean that you wouldn't be actually voting in the place which you're living in at the moment. So how does that work?
So I actually want to even extend that beyond what you've mentioned. We've had a process called ward demarcation changes, which means that even if you haven't moved, you possibly could be living in a completely different ward to the one you lived in last election cycle, and need to vote at a different voting station. So absolutely everyone, especially in this stage, needs to at least check their registration is correct, and that they are at the correct station. So you can do that in one of two ways, or a couple of ways. You can do it online at the IEC website. Or you can do it by going into your voting station, your nearest voting station on registration weekend this weekend, or you can go to check.da.org.za. So that is a little check platform. You put your ID number in there. It says, do you live in this block on the map? And if you don't live in that block on the map, you know you're obviously incorrectly registered. But you have to make sure you register in the correct ward, because even if you haven't moved and you've voted at the same voting station for 40 years, there's a chance you're now incorrectly registered.
Okay, so that is a very important point and something which we hadn't picked up. So that's, really great. You can go check the DA website, you can take the IEC website. It's really a very simple process. I've done it myself. You basically just need your ID number and it will give you all of the information that you need. Now, Daniel, in terms of who can register and the place where you register, because really what the registration does is it ties you to a certain station. So the risk you run if you're not, haven't checked exactly about where you're registering, is that you could stand in line for a certain amount of time, get to the front, and then they'll say to you, no, this is the wrong place. So who actually can register in these elections?
So any citizen of South Africa, and I have to stress citizen, not permanent resident, but any citizens may vote. But any citizen who is above the age of 16 years old may register. You may only vote from 18, but once you turn 16, you may register to vote. So even if your birthday, and we have a few that I've noticed, whose birthday will be on the 4th of November, which is voting day, they're turning 18 on that day, they may register now to be able to vote on that day. So from 16 years and upwards.
Okay, so from 16 years, you can register. From 18 years, you can vote. To get into just the consequences in a Johannesburg setting, I think that if you ask your average person who actually is in the current coalition in Johannesburg, I don't know that they'll necessarily be able to tell you every single one of the players. They may be able to tell you that it's an ANC person, but it's beyond that, I'm not entirely sure. And I think that the local level coalitions has had a kind of numbing effect on people who can't quite keep up with everything, and so they don't occur. Don't pay attention, rather. So what can you tell us about if this is actually going to be the likelihood for the next election, and what is likely to, not what is likely to happen, but if this is an important election, given that I think most people in Johannesburg would agree that the place looks like a bit of a chamois?
So I am going to be honest, I am a DA politician, so I'm going to give you a very DA-centric approach to this, and I think that's fair for my behalf. We have had a very fragmented vote in Johannesburg in the past, and it has led to these coalitions of 9 or 10 parties where one party worth 0.2% can actually all hold the mayorship and the balance of power, which we try to avoid. We try and avoid that in the current election, and that all means that everyone who can vote needs to turn out and vote for the most likely party that can influence their views in terms of council. Not to try to spread out the vote, but to consolidate the opposition support behind one party. And if we do that, we can honestly win a phase where we can probably get a majority in council. We're looking at it, and avoid the coalition absolute tragedy that we've seen in Johannesburg for the last 5 years, where it's just been whoever has the balance of power. If you got 0.2% or 0.3%, you can call the shots in Joburg, which is completely unfair to the rest of the voters.
Right. Okay. So that's the problem with the coalition, and the DA's mayoral candidate is obviously Helen Zille, and so I'm assuming that the target for her will be to get as high up as she can, either a majority or, given the current state, is probably more likely a large plurality of the votes in order to make a stable coalition to govern the city. I mean, that would presumably be the aim.
So, yeah, the aim, I think Helen repeats it quite often, the aim is to get 490,000 voters to vote for the DA in Johannesburg. That is, what we got in 2016 was 481,000 voters. So we've done the maths on the turnout modeling for this election, and we know 490,000 voters, the DA will have a majority in the Johannesburg Council. It's not a huge number of voters. It's really not. So it's a case of having the disillusioned voter, the guy who hasn't voted in the last 10, 15 years to rock up and vote, and we can honestly change the city.
Now, just tell us then, if you've checked that you registered and you're unhappy with the registration, there's a problem or something, what is the process to actually register come this weekend?
So if you're the least technology wise, if you want to go through to your voting station, so for example, if you live in Sandringham, it's Jabula Recreation Center or wherever your nearest voting station is, and you go there with your ID, they'll ask you your address, they'll update your registration or check it, depending on what's necessary, and that's quite a quick process. If you're a little bit more technologically savvy, you can do it on your phone. Take a picture of your ID and go to the IEC website and follow the steps to update your registration on your phone yourself. You can only do that. You can't do it for other people because you need one phone number per voter, but you can do it from the comfort of your own couch.
Okay, so those are your options. You can go old school, you can go new school, depending on your requirement. And where can people get more information on this, Daniel, if there's something that they haven't managed to find out from this interview?
So again, your first point of call is check.da.org.za, and it will point you to where you should be wanting to vote or register. If not, they can contact me on my service delivery assistant to 0694702054. I'll repeat that again, 0694702054. WhatsApp me on that number with the word register, and I will happily send information. But yeah, the IEC website's also a great source if they don't want to go through a DA portal. But if you put it into Google, you will find the information. But if you want to come to me, I'll definitely help you.
Right. Well, there you go. Daniel Shea, Ward Councillor for Ward 72, explaining about this weekend's voter registration drive. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us on Chai FM.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
101.9 Chai FM. Now, it is Youth Day tomorrow, so I thought we would throw in a youth-related story to talk about. And that has to do with falling birth rates from around the world. Now, when I was a young'un at my university, I did geography, as I think a number of you might know. And so one of the things that you do is you learn about demography, right? The study of populations. And what was very interesting is that 20 years ago, they had to teach something called Malthusianism and the critique thereof, because it was a key part of how people understood how populations basically progressed. And what Malthusianism argues and what it was all about was by a guy called Thomas Malthus. And Thomas Malthus had this theory that the number of people in the world was going up and up and up, and the amount of food that we had was staying finite, and there at some point we were going to get to a place where we would not be able to actually feed all the people that were going to be born. And so he created an entire sort of background into or theoretical study into the idea that the earth was overpopulated. And this kind of carried on into the 19th century, and there was a couple of famous Nobel Prize winners who really pushed this theory, and it had a lot of very serious consequences in the world, because there was all sorts of pushes to sterilize people and government policies that focused on population degrowth, which had quite serious implications. The most famous example being China and the One China policy, where if you had you weren't allowed to have more than one child, and as a result, because of cultural factors in China, it was considered more culturally acceptable to have a boy instead of a girl. And so suddenly China has this very lopsided population graph. Now, I give you that whole background because 20 years ago, the sort of received wisdom, the core idea in the world was that there were too many people. And really, less than 20 years later, that has completely flipped on its head. And what we're seeing is that in basically every major part of the world, we're seeing a major decline in the number of people having children, what's called the population replacement rate. So basically, the rate of population increase the amount of people have to be born, which is on average 2.1 children you have to have. And that has been growing to the extent that in some countries, the number of the majority of women that children that they want to have is actually zero. And it's actually fallen off a cliff. It's particularly bad in Europe, where populations have been older for quite a long time. But you're seeing it in Japan, where it's actually at the worst. Japan has the statistic that they like to talk about is the fact that in Japan now, adult nappies are selling out more than children nappies, because that's what the population looks like. China is hot on its heels, as I said, because of this one child policy, but really all around the world. India, it was the front page of The Economist this last week, about India's drop-off rate. You're seeing it in South America, even if you're expecting this, like Muslim countries, Iran, that sort of thing. But there, you're also finding this population decrease. The only place where it isn't existing, really, is sub-Saharan Africa, which is one, and in Israel, which is very interesting. And in the question is potentially about economics. It's about whether people want to get married and have children if they feel like they can. Different gender roles changing how people are thinking about children and about families, how expensive it is, but also what role the man and the woman have in the care of said children and the ability for them to get them educated. But it's not just economics. It's also a question of culture, because with effectively things like birth control, it's actually become much easier for women just not to have children. And because it's painful and dangerous, it's actually, they're just opting out of it. So that's another thing. But another argument is that the creation of technology and the smartphone has meant that people are not engaging as much with one another. Cell phones create a solitary environment, also create unnatural expectations of what to expect in a relationship. If you've ever been on Instagram all day, you'll know that. Also, it spread certain kind of very progressive ideologies about gender roles. And what you found is that young women politically have gone sort of much more left, whereas men have either stayed relatively the same or gone more right. And this is important not only from a just what those ideas actually mean, but it also is important from an idea that if you are politically highly polarized from your partner, and the way that politics is now highly identitarian, it means that it makes it very difficult early on to actually get into the honeymoon stage of the relationship, because it means that you're likely to have a fight or an argument, or if somebody says they like Donald Trump or you're a Zionist or you are MAGA or you're a fan of Antifa, then suddenly people might reconsider if they want to date you. So this is causing less people to actually couple and therefore get married and therefore have children. What's interesting is in Israel, we're not seeing this. Partly that has to do with the Haredim, who have these multiples of children, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. But actually, even your average Israeli who's secular is having 3 or 4. And there's still a culture of this, even amongst secular Israelis, even amongst amongst couples that are not heterosexual. You have multiple children that are coming out of that. So the Israelis are bucking the trend. The Africans are. And it's something that we'll probably end up talking a lot more about going forward, because the results of not having people in your society are quite dramatic. And so it is something to watch. But given that it is Youth Day, we would just like to point out that there's probably less youth in the world going forward. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is Studio 972. Hope that you are doing very, very well out there as we move towards the end of the show for today at what now constitutes just about 9:52. Now, if you want to go see a movie over the next while, I thought I'd make a little bit of a recommendation for you, something which you might enjoy, because it is a Jewish-themed show, currently and culture, and it was kind of sort of, it's not a Jewish movie per se, but it has a kind of Jewish background, and the movie is called Tuna, and it's not about the fish, it's about a piano tuner, and a guy who works for a piano tuner. And they don't give you the exact background into his background, but basically this, like, a young man who works for an old elderly Jewish piano tuner, and he basically goes around and fixes pianos with the old Jewish man. And it's kind of shot, if you can imagine, it's in New York, and it's almost shot in the same way as, like, Seinfeld would have been shot in the early 90s, right? So it's kind of lots of street scenes of New York and pictures of the Brooklyn Bridge and, you know, downtown Manhattan. And you've got this, the suburbs of New York. So it's got that kind of grainy New York on the ground feel. And it follows the story of this piano tuner who, through a variety of mechanisms, ends up discovering that he can listen not only to pianos, but also to safes. He can actually open a safe because of the way that safes operate. There's a sound, and you can click in here, as the balls click inside the safe, you can figure out what the combination is. And through this process, he ends up getting involved with an Israeli gang that's operating in New York. And it has in it it's starred by the gangsters Lior Raz, which is very interesting, and a couple of other guys from those Israeli Netflix series that were popular about 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and what happens because he gets involved with this gang, because he's a piano tuner, the whole thing is set around music. And his world of music and sort of what that means, and it's a kind of it's a love story and a story about him and these and his sort of elderly Jewish man and his family, and it's an action thriller, but it's also kind of a sweet light-hearted movie that's well shot and kind of looks like those old movies that you used to see in back in the day. So it's called The Tuner. It's worthwhile going to see. Also with Dustin Hoffman, who's one of the main actors. Very old Dustin Hoffman, but nonetheless. And well worth going to have a check out. That brings us to the end of the show for today. Thank you to everyone who helps put the show together. Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons. Vusia's on the sound. And Mukundi and Vusi and the rest of the team, you would have heard, put in a great new intro music today. So thanks, guys, for that. And to you, dear listener, who joins us every single week, join us again next week on Studio 972.